Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. As you know, those that were listening last week, I was in Dubai at COP28, the most important climate conference where nation states and leaders from around the world come together and try and make decisions that are in the best interest for the whole of the planet. At the moment, we are still in the middle of deliberations. One of the biggest issues right now is whether there can be an agreement across nation states about phasing out the usage of fossil fuels. I'm optimistic. The problem that we do have is this year's COP is in an oil state. The president runs an oil company, one of the largest in the world. And so, of course, there are anti-campaigns going on about the phasing out of fossil fuels, which is, of course, catastrophic when it comes to temperatures rising and going beyond that critical 1.5 degrees. However, there is something that we can do. There is something that you and I and every single person out there can actually do to take responsibility and become a solution to the biggest issue of humanity's time, runaway climate crisis, biodiversity loss, pollution, etc. Now, what is that? Well, just today, Scottish Widows, who I'm sure you're familiar with, have actually launched their second Green Pensions report. Now, greening pensions reduces carbon footprint more than stopping flying, more than becoming a plant-based eater, more than working from home and not traveling to work, etc. In fact, Make My Money Matter, which is the organization that's completely independent, that's trying to really get this message across, says that by switching to a green pension, it can have 21 times more of a positive impact on your emissions, personal and what you're subjected to, but just by living, than anything else. 21 times more. So this is the single most important thing that each individual can do in order to become a real solution to this issue that we know is the climate crisis. Now, how do you go about doing that? Now, I just want to read out some of the stats that Scottish Widows have released today. I'm actually heading up the campaign with them because I felt it was such an important thing to do. So switching to a green pension can save emissions equal to 11 return flights to New York per year. However, this is the important bit. Over two-thirds, that's 67% of us, do not know how to switch to a responsibly invested pension fund. And Scottish Widows and I we're urging government, should I say, and employers to highlight the importance of green pension schemes. Now, what can you do? So if you are in employment or you're self-employed and you contribute to a pension, which, by the way, is law, so most of us are, and occasionally people do opt out, what you need to do is you need to go to your employer, you need to go to your department that deals with, it could be HR or to your CEO if you've got direct contact, and you ask them whether they are subscribed to a green pension. And if they're not, why not? And if they are, you want to move your pension to the greenest pension that they have access to. So please go and do that today. It's the single one thing that you can do to actually be a part of positivity and a solution when it comes to the climate crisis. It's very clear. I don't think we're going to be able to rely on global leaders to actually unite in decision making, because Well, there's just so much separation and adversity between the way one country operates and another country operates. So please go and do that, because it will have a humongous, enormous, massive impact on the very thing that we need in order to create a solution. So go and find out about green pensions and make the switch as quickly as you possibly can. Now, on that note, talking about business and working in the business environment, today's guests, Eudora and Andrew, are our guests today. They are, well, firstly, a dynamic couple, brilliant people, both have amazing history in business. But more importantly, they are educating and inspiring leaders, business leaders, to get the heart, to get the love back into business. Now, I think we can all agree that if business did have a bigger heart, more love, more opportunity for us to connect with that heartfelt way of being, then business would be completely different to the way it is now. So I'd like to welcome to Lean Into Clean this week's guests, Andrew and Eudora. Welcome.
Hello, Jarvis.
Hello. Thank you for inviting us.
It's an absolute pleasure. And as I mentioned to you before, it's the first time on my show, which is relatively new, that we've actually had two guests. So this is going to be a lot of fun. And you're putting me to the test by having two of you to challenge me. Could I ask you both, first of all, and we'll be gentlemen, Andrew. We'll say that ladies go first on this particular occasion, without being chauvinistic or anything else. Just purely, that's the way I was brought up. Eudora, would you just introduce yourself? Just give us a little bit of background on you, and which will nicely lead to the work that you're doing today. So where did it all start for you?
For me, I was always very much involved in business. My father worked for himself at the bottom of our garden, so I very much saw how business, how being self-employed kind of started. And I've worked for many different companies in many different countries in many different sectors, and each time I found the same message, which was if the leaders are not heartful, if they're not connected to their purpose, then actually it leads to very unhappy organizations where people choose to leave or shut down or pretend to work but not really work. So I kept seeing this time and time again in all the different places that I worked. And at the same time, I'm a coach and trained to be a coach, and very much ask myself, there must be another way. There must be a different way of doing this. I'm also a Quaker, and Quakers, as some of you may know, had and have a very different approach to business, which is heartfelt, which is very much including everybody, saying we are all equal and making decisions together. So that's where I started from, and was quietly doing this until I met Andrew, and then realized, oh, I've got a partner in crime here. So on that note, Andrew.
Well, let me just interrupt before you do, Andrew. I happen to live just a few minutes away from the very first Quaker meeting up in North Yorkshire. It was on just around the corner from the Bolton Abbey estate. I think it was down the road from a place called Parsifal Hall. But anyway, I've driven past it. There's a little sign outside saying the first Quaker meeting. So that's lovely to hear that. I'd like to talk a bit more about that. But Andrew, over to you. So Andrew and I have known each other for many years. I can say this without blowing Andrew's trumpet too much, if I may. He was absolutely one of the pioneers when it comes to sustainable business. He happened to win one of our first People Environment Achievement Awards, a PEA award. I got to meet Andrew then. And I must say that rarely do you meet men that have the level of sensitivity and courage and power and strength and a nicely balanced masculine and femininity about them. And I recognize this in Andrew because I like to feel that I live those qualities in myself. So Andrew and I have known each other for many years, and we're really getting to know each other now, over the last 6 months to 12 months. So Andrew, tell us about you and why you're doing what you're doing, and what led you to doing this work.
Well, first of all, thank you for the glowing introduction. Maybe I just leave it at that, actually.
Yeah, why not?
I've been in business all my life. I grew up in Dublin. I started working in the local sweet shop at the age of 13. So I've always been fascinated and interested in business. And having started my career at Mars, I ended up setting up and running a consultancy. And in my early to mid 40s, I had a bit of a midlife crisis where it was like, am I really going to do this for the rest of my days? And the answer was no. And so I went and bought a couple of supermarkets, which, you know, sort of the sort of thing you do when you have a midlife.
As you do, yeah, from sweet shop to supermarkets. It seems like a nice progression there.
And with hindsight, I can see that what I was doing was trying to find a different way to run a business that wasn't just about short-term profits. Although I didn't consciously know that at the time. I think intuitively I knew that. So I bought two supermarkets. We formed an organization called Thornton's Budgeons. How we won that P award back a long time ago was the store in Crouch End had a farm on the roof, and we used to grow fruit and vegetables on the roof.
That's right.
Community would volunteer to help us, and then we would sell it downstairs, and all the money went back into the roof. And it was extraordinary because you had people in the community, at school kids coming in, connecting back with nature, with the food growing process. And one of the biggest challenges we have in the world at the moment is a disconnection with nature. And I'm sure we'll pick up this later on because we spend a lot of our time doing our work in nature. Partway along the journey, I lost the Crouch End store to competition. Too many supermarkets in too little place, but focused in Belsize, realized then it was about heart. And it's around the time Eudora and I met, and we basically used the Belsize Park store as a laboratory what would it look like? So it was a complete exercise in practice. And the book we wrote subsequently, Putting the Heart Back into Business, is like the theory of the practice rather than, you know, people tend to start with the theory and then try and practice it. We did the other way around. And as you know, there was a lot of things we did. And what we really did was got people connected to themselves. And it helped people feel safe and therefore be more creative, more committed behind the purpose we had, which was we are the community supermarket that really cares about people and planet.
Yeah, lovely, lovely, lovely. Thank you very much. So I'm going to ask this question to oh, sorry, Andrew, please, please.
Just to say our defining, the thing that we did that was the most impactful, yeah, is in 2018, we met an organization called A Plastic Planet, and we watched a film called Plastic Ocean. And we just saw what was happening with plastic and felt we didn't have a choice but to do something about it. So we became the second in the world, first in the UK, to introduce plastic. Well, it was first plastic-free zones. We had 28 zones across the supermarket, and every category we had plastic-free products. And we got about 2,500 products, but the first 1,800 products we did in 10 weeks. And what's extraordinary about this is that we managed to increase our sales, increase our customer loyalty, and make a huge impact in the world, because one of our primary drivers in doing this was to show the big supermarkets that this wasn't as difficult as they let on. Dave Lewis, who was running Tesco at the time, afterwards said that we single-handedly changed the relationship between plastics and supermarkets globally with one shop in North London.
Amazing. Wowee.
Heart-based organization. And by the way, the bottom line, you know, all this stuff is, I'm sure we'll explore later on, is really positive to the bottom line.
Yeah, great. That's the most important thing we need to know. So brilliant. Thank you so much for that. And let's just try and understand for a moment. So when you talk about heart in business, and incidentally, that's your book, right? It's the name of your book as well. Is that something you wrote together, or did you do? Yes, you did. I can see you both nodding, which is fantastic. Just tell me from both of your perspectives, what does heart mean when it comes to business? And Eudora, let's start with you. Let's just open this out so we all know that we're talking about the same thing.
Well, I'm going right back to Quakers in business. So when Cadbury's, Roundtree, Pascal's were in business, the approach that they took was very much that if you treat your employees, the people who work for you, properly, proper housing, proper pay, actually look at their welfare, their care, their health, then actually you do better in business because people want to work for you, want to be part of your family, and it impacts the whole of their families. So that's kind of where I come from. And for me, that's always been important, as in second nature. And Andrew, do you want to kind of add from?
Yeah, and what we, in the supermarket, what we became clear very quickly was the engaging of everybody and this idea of stakeholders, although at the time we didn't use that word. And basically everybody you touch. So that the employees is the obvious first one. And I know Richard Branson has famously said, take care of your employees and they will take care of your customer. Because the theory is the customer's is, you know, the customer's biggest focus. Actually, I would agree with Richard Branson. The employees are the biggest focus. But the other stakeholders are the customers. They are the community in which you operate in. They are your suppliers. They are the environment, because the environment is a stakeholder for all of us. And finally, the shareholders. And the heart approach, which is very much lined up with the approach of B Corps, which is a growing movement of more ethical businesses, is if you take care of the first five, the shareholders will be taken care of. Whereas the traditional business model has been very much about maximizing shareholder value and basically doesn't give a crap about the rest. And then you end up with the environment being thrashed the way it is. You end up with employees being treated badly, being badly paid. You know, the whole inequality crisis is coming from that. You know, if every business in the world operated what Eudora described as the Quaker principles, we wouldn't have the inequality crisis we would have in the world. And the other big thing that came from the laboratory of the supermarket was habits. So a lot of companies now have pretty good purposes. A lot of companies have good values and principles they operate to, but very, very few actually deliver it. And that's because they lack the habits to do so. And what I mean by that is, breaking down the detail. If your principles is you want to live with integrity, then you break down, well, what does that mean? What habits do you need to live with integrity? So one could be to speak your truth. Great. So what's the barriers to speaking your truth? Well, maybe it's not safe to do so. Or maybe I don't, if you're my boss, Jarvis, I don't know how to have a difficult conversation with you. You're doing something that I don't think is in integrity, but I don't know how to say it to you. Then the next step is, well, what are the training needs? And then training the leaders of the business in that. So it's a real detailed step-by-step process we go through, which we started to experiment with the supermarket. And some of the habits we had there were the ones that led to such a greater level of commitment and engagement of people, which meant we could deliver this plastic-free mission in 10 weeks.
Nice. And habits, I mean, I love the word habit because it's got such a it's got such a kind of an addictive nature to it, isn't it? It's something that we kind of subscribe to from the minute we get out of bed, or even whilst we're in bed, that these rituals or habits that we consistently find ourselves doing. And some of them are great and some of them are not very good. So we'd like to open those up a bit more. Let's stay with habits, but we are going to move to a commercial break. When we come back from the break, we're going to open up some of the habits that you guys have. I mean, you two live together, you work together. What are those habits that you have? But we'll come back to that in a moment, and we'll cut to a commercial break now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. So whilst we were just listening to the commercial break, I very, very quickly searched what habit means, right? And habit, it says, a settled or regular tendency or practice, especially one that is hard to give up. So, Andrew, what habit does Eudora have that you'd love her to give up?
Oh, gosh. But the thing about Eudora, she's perfect. So in our house, what Hannah and I joke about it, that Eudora's perfect. There's nothing.
Well, let me throw the question at Eudora then. Let's hope she's less proper.
As in, what habit do I need to give up?
No, 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 no. What habit in Andrew would you like him to give up? Excuse me.
So I don't know what how I see habits.
Yep.
All of us have times when we're stressed. All of us have times when we're depleted. All of us have difficult moments.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to reach for our drug of choice, be that a Mars bar, a glass of wine, whatever, you know, binge watching.
Yeah.
And, initially, that gives us a little buzz and we feel great because it kind of like, oh, yeah, that, you know, I'm stressed, I deserve this. But in the long term, it doesn't actually replenish us or help us kind of work through the issue, the thing that's stressing us. And the way I see it is that if we can slowly move towards doing things regularly throughout our day that help replenish us and grow us and help us through the stressful situations in a positive way, then step by step, we're making life easier for ourselves. And none of us are perfect. None of us, we all have loads going on, but I try whenever I can to go outside, get a bit of sun, go swimming, because that's my thing that really works for me, swimming outdoors. But also, obviously, you know, getting the nutrients I need, eating healthily, all those things. They're not surprises. We know what they are. Why is it that we reach for those other things? And as a coach, I very much work with people and discuss in our family why we're reaching for one thing rather than something else and what's going on behind it. Sorry, that's a bit of a serious message.
No, I think it's beautiful. And the only reason I was being a bit playful with it, and of course I didn't want you to be dobbing each other in, but it just gives context to our listeners. So just to really understand what a habit is, because I think that if most people, and you know, tell me whether this is the case with the people that you work with, most people are not aware of their habits, particularly the ones that are destructive. And if they are aware of the destructive, then awareness is the key. And once you're aware, you're actually able to act and respond, right? So I wanted to just open that up and thank you for that. Andrew, what would you say are the worst is not the best word to use, but for context, what would you say the worst habits are in business? Things that you come across all the time with the leaders that you work with the business directors and organizations and teams and employees that you work with. What are constant habits?
Well, actually, if I can butt in,
please do.
I'm a bit higher.
I have a thought, which is, and this might surprise you, but I actually think the worst habit is how we speak to other people. That very easily we are critical, put people down and tell them their faults, rather than taking a moment before we respond to a situation and actually see the good and the positive and actually appreciate other people. Now, that may seem like a weird habit, but for me, that is the most detrimental, because you're not just being detrimental to yourself by speaking in such a way, but you are actually destroying the hopes and dreams of somebody else. You're putting them down, you're being critical, you're stopping them from stepping into more of who they are.
I love that. And actually, even that begs a question. Is that the habit, or is the habit being on a treadmill, working in an environment where you actually don't have time to contemplate and to stop and to be more considerate and therefore more discerning in the way that you actually speak to somebody? So, no, I love that. I really love that. Andrew, did you have anything to add?
I mean, and the positive habit that you're always talking about here is giving appreciation daily.
Yeah.
And praise.
And in the so just quickly then. So when we come to habits, and it's interesting you've said that, do you focus on, you know, the kind of disruptive habits, or do you try and focus on the repositioning of positive affirmation habits. Ah, that's interesting, because I'd immediately got into kind of negative zone, but actually you've just completely flipped it. Tell us more.
What we're doing is focusing on giving people the habits that will lead to a happier, healthier life, basically. Now, some are generic. So giving appreciation daily, and in the supermarket, me and other leaders would go around the store and we would be specifically looking to find things that were going right. If we saw something was going wrong, stum, keep it for another time. Mostly traditional retail is boss walks around. That's not right. That's not right. That's not right. Never says anything positive.
Yeah.
That's just a microcosm of the whole of life. Appraisals, generally speaking, 95% is talking about development needs. You get a little bit, oh, you're great at this, Jarvis, you're fantastic, you know, you're a great radio presenter, blah, 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 blah. Now, your development needs. And then all this time is on development needs.
It's a bit like, I remember when I first came into the space of trying to inspire and educate and actually poke and prod people about this issue we now know as a climate crisis. This was 15 years ago. We committed as a media company to only tell positive stories. A bit like how I wanted to bring up my children by really feeding them positivity and really feeding them, you know, praising them for the brilliant things that they were doing rather than the no, 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 you can't do that, you can't do that, which just feels like a scientifically proven now, right? It's a much better way to bring people up. Okay, brilliant. So Sorry, Andrew, go.
One habit that I think is so important in business is listening. So mostly in business, we don't listen.
Yeah.
People talk to each other. You never get a chance to explore what's going on. So in the creative process, often people are just shut down straight away. You're starting to suggest something. It says, oh, yeah, we tried that before. It doesn't work. Close down. And that reduces safety, because psychological safety is the single most important thing that differentiates high-performing and low-performing teams.
Yeah.
And listening. So creating an environment and teaching people how to listen. I know this sounds kind of strange, but how to really listen and to create a space for people to be safe to speak is one of the most important positive habits that we teach people. And these are generic habits. And then there will be very specific, given the organization's purpose, there may be specific habits. But I don't know any organization that wouldn't benefit from giving appreciation daily and better.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I'm gonna. You've always asked my guests to give us two songs that mean something to you. And I asked the question: it's either a soundtrack to this thing we're calling a climate crisis, or a soundtrack to your life and how you feel. So, the first song, if it's all right, we're going to play is the Pete Seeger's song. Last night I had the starkest dream. So we're going to play that song, and then either one of you can tell us why you chose it and what it means to you. Here we go.
Last night I had the strangest dream I never dreamed before.
What a brilliant song. I loved it. Thank you. Thank you. That brought a nice warm feeling to my heart. Who chose that song?
Me.
And what does it mean to you?
So when I was about 6 years old, I moved from Germany to the UK, and I heard this. We sang this at school, and it really changed my way of seeing things. Again, as a Quaker, you know, Quakers are very much about sort of social movement and change. And this song was written in 1950, just at the time before there was a lot of war was imminent in the world and a lot of kind of uncertainty. And I think right now that's where we're at. I mean, there is war. We are in uncertainty. And for me, listening to this song, it just stirs up choice and that thing of actually I can do something. And things can be different. And there doesn't have to be a room full of men deciding to go to war. We can do something in a different way.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. That's a beautiful, intimate moment. So let's get back to habits. What have you, when you've been working, I mean, firstly, what kind of businesses do you work with? I mean, what kind of level of businesses are you working with? And if there's business leaders out there listening now going, God, I wish we could change our culture and habits. Just give us a bit of background.
We work with businesses of all shapes and sizes. It's not a sector specific thing. It's not like, oh, this works in supermarkets. We've worked obviously in supermarkets, in food businesses, insurance companies, charities, blah, 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 across all sorts of different sectors. And really, what tends to be the differentiating factor is the CEO. And this generally has to be driven from the top down. The CEO realizes there's something different, wants something different. Maybe, you know, the business could be doing well, but they're just a bit unfulfilled. It's just like, this is great, but it's not, you know, the world's a mess. And what are we doing? We're churning out widgets or something like this. What's the purpose in this? Why? So it's a discontent, usually a dissatisfaction at what's going on. But that tends to be the sort of businesses that come to us or we meet and come across. And yeah, so that it's quite universal, I don't think. And it's not just businesses, actually. And we work for charities, any organization where a group of people come together to do something.
Okay. So all organizations across the, but normally organizations that have more than one person within a team, right? Yeah. And what would you say, is there any, I don't like the word case study, but is there any example of where you've really seen these kind of positive habits be affirmed within an organization? And then what has been the knock-on effect of that? Give us just an example of the, you know, something magical that you've been able to create.
So we run leadership programs, and one of them that we've just recently been running, where we've gone deeply into habits, has been quite powerful. We've had leaders from different organizations meeting up together for a year, looking at their purpose and kind of where they want to go personally and the organization that they work for, where that organization's going. And then when we've done that, gone deeply into habits. And one of the people on the program who really touched me with how she looked at habits was a woman who is a director of finance in the organization she works for, but also has a lot of young children and juggles both. And she had been feeling guilty both at work and at home about prioritization, where she was putting her energy. And through changing her habits, she has stopped looking at her phone and her emails when she's at home, and really is present for her children. So much so that actually her relationship with them has changed, and there's a lot more adventure and more fun and more safety. And because of that, because she's really present there, she can actually has been able to step up and at work be much more focused and achieve a lot more. So we really kind of got to the kind of nuts and bolts. What is it that wasn't working? What was going on? And there, from that, she was able to set herself some really clear habits and some challenges in order to kind of just rebalance her life, and feels much more rebalanced, and actually has found that she has a lot more time for herself as well. Mm-hmm. I think all young parents with young children would say they don't have enough time for themselves, and she's been able to find that.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. What a quality of change that you brought to somebody's life, immediate life and family life, and therefore the knock-on effects on the whole community, right?
Yeah, she brought it to herself, and that's what I think is, because we run these programs, but it's about empowering others, so empowering the people we work with to find it themselves. That's, yeah, to see her flourish and say, no, this is, I'm going to take control, this is my life, and this is what I want to do.
Yeah, lovely. Lovely. We've got a minute until we go to the next commercial break. Andrew, just be brief, if you wouldn't mind. We will go to commercial break and we will come back, but just be mindful, we got to go in about a minute. But go for it.
In our book, putting the heart back into business, we Eudora interviewed a number of people from the supermarket about their experience of the whole thing. And what struck me most about those interviews was the fact that everybody talked about the impact it had on their family life, their home life, their communities. And we are one person. This idea of there's a work Jarvis and a home Jarvis,
yeah,
is there is only one Jarvis. And if people are, our experience, if people are more balanced in home and work, then they are a much better person and they will deliver, they will be better at both roles, homework and personal work. And there was one lovely example in the supermarket where somebody realized, again, mother with young kids, if she took 15 minutes to herself after work before going into being a mother, she was so much more present. But up to that, she had thought that that was selfish to take 15 minutes on her own.
Mm.
But the work helped her realize herself it wasn't selfish, actually. It was self-caring, and therefore she was a better mother and also better at what she did at work.
Mm, beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to go to a commercial break. We'll be back in a minute. Hold tight, you two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, Andrew and Eudora. For those that have just tuned in, this is Jarvis Smith on Lean Into Clean. We're in deep in conversation here regarding putting the heart back in business and what that actually means, what habits you might have that are not serving the business and what habits you might be able to implement into your lifestyle in order to create a nicer, safer, more heartfelt environment. Andrew and Eudora, you know, when I hear you talk about the work that you do, what comes to me is culture, the culture of an organization. I remember seeing a post a few years back that, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it's so important now, culture. You know, we're in a time where a lot of businesses, if you don't mind me saying, probably have very little purpose in the grand scheme of the climate crisis that we're in. A lot of people are working for organizations that they can't truly hand on heart say that they believe in the purpose of the organization. So what I've found is that a lot of businesses are creating a culture so people feel part of something. They feel part of those values and that purpose. But how are we, or how are you, should I say, how are you going into organizations or speaking with the leadership team? Like what's a typical scenario? So somebody's opened up the email, they've got in contact with you, they realize that they're in, for want of a better word, dire straits. What do you guys do?
Well, you're firstly absolutely right about culture, because this is all about culture. And every organization has a culture. You either have a conscious culture or you, if you don't, you have a non-conscious culture.
Yeah.
So the culture is there. When I took over my supermarkets, there was a culture of command and control. The center knows best. You do as what you're told. And yeah, I wish I knew what I did now about culture, because if I had, I would have gone in straight away and worked on changing that culture. It took me a long time to realize about the whole culture piece.
Mm.
So I learned all that. What we would do with an organization is very quickly understand what the culture is like. It may be that we work with them on purpose. It may be that we work with them on their values, or most likely we will start to work into the habits piece so that it's really, really clear because we know habits deliver. And the other key to all of this is being in nature. We touched on it earlier. So we aim to run all of our workshops and coaching and so on in or around nature. So that means we live in Hampstead, in Highgate near Hampstead Heath in North London. So we're very close to taking clients out on the heath, swimming in Hampstead ponds. We had one client we took swimming in September, and it was so outside of his comfort zone. Yet he had an extraordinary breakthrough afterwards, because we need to be connected with nature and taken a bit outside our comfort zone. There was a study I read recently that after a 4-day hike in nature with no access to technology, all the participants had a 50% increase in their creativity, measured by some test in creativity.
Mm.
because we're a product, and we're designed by how our ancestors live, which is in nature. We're not a product, a being meant to be in concrete, surrounded by technology. It's really stressful for our systems. So our systems relax, calm, and access more creativity, more all the positive things in nature. So that is so, so important to get people out. So hence Eudora mentioned in terms of swimming outside, you know, one of my regular habits is to run and to swim outside, to get outside and to swim in the Hampstead ponds when it's 4 degrees at the moment, which is, you know, is, and I know you do the same, Jarvis. So that's really important. So we will always, if people want us to run a workshop in a skyscraper office block in the City of London, we'd be saying, no, that's not going to work. That's not, we're not going to do that. So to out of your normal comfort environment into nature. And there was a really interesting quote in this article in The Guardian where it said, it doesn't matter if you don't like being in nature, that doesn't matter. It still helps you, which is a really interesting thing, because somebody said, well, I don't like getting my feet dirty or whatever. So it's pushing people outside their comfort zone.
Yeah, nice, nice. I mean, you're absolutely right. I love being in nature, and it's very much part of the principles that I follow. And I remember reading a study. It was quite an in-depth study, actually. But even just sitting your backside on the ground, on the earth, people will be flabbergasted by the shifts that it can have on your frequency, and getting you back into the natural rhythm, which, of course, nature has. It has a natural rhythm. Brilliant. Thank you. We're running out of time. This show goes so quickly. I want to get your second song in because, you know, not only is it one of my favorites, I would love everybody else to hear it as well. But who chose this second song? Do you want to tell us what it is and who it's by? But then afterwards, I'll ask you to just tell me how it makes you feel. But who chose the song?
Actually, I chose the second one as well. And the reason I've chosen both songs is to remind us of the past, of times that were difficult and when there was social change and political change, because we are right now in a difficult time for, you know, in the world. So the second song was written in 1987. Again, something I heard when I was very young. And it inspired me to realize that actually we all have the power in ourselves to rise up and be strong. And it's my mantra. And actually, when I'm out and about in London, if I see somebody who I don't know, has got a nice hairstyle, is wearing an interesting hat, something interesting about them, I stop and pay them a compliment about how they are, to remind them of that inner strength inside themselves, because we are all pushed down all of the time, and that enough. Let's start finding the power in each other and stepping up. So this is going to inspire me.
Beautiful. Hashtag be more Eudora. This is Something Inside So Strong by Labby Siffre. So many beautiful versions of that song, but that one in particular is really, really moving. Well, Eudora, of course, you chose it. How does it make, oh, Andrew, how does it make you feel, that song?
What? When I hear this song, I think of the team in the supermarket. And I think of when I first met them, they were all a bit downtrodden, a bit put upon, a bit told what to do. And it's curious, there was a customer we had called Anita, who I met at a conscious business event. And she said she'd been going to the store for 18 years, but she saw the same faces, but the people that were there were really different. And what I saw when I sold the business was some really powerful, competent leaders who knew to stood up for themselves. And that was the product of this. And there's a lovely line in, you know, talking about not being good enough in business. What happens so much is there's so much of a bun fight for political progress that people continuously put other people down. So instead of wanting to grow your team and make them the best of themselves, most businesses operate on a sort of rat race of sort of trampling over each other and trying to make other people look small to make yourself look good.
Mm.
What we do is, you know, this song is so powerful for that reason. Because, you know, we are all strong. If we feel safe and confident, we are strong and we have so much to contribute, but so little of that is tapped into in business. And it's funny, you will, as listeners out there, you will go into situations, and retail and hospitality is great because you meet people. You meet people. So you go into a supermarket or a restaurant, you can feel if the people there are happy and enjoying themselves. I certainly can. And I know in Thornton Spudgeons, people would say often, what's going on in here? There's something that feels different about this place. But it's very subtle often, but that's really powerful. Because if people go into a place where they feel a positive energy, they'll want to go back. I know this, and there's lots of case studies and books that have been written and academic studies that show businesses of this type are more successful financially. And it's often needed to prove to CEOs and the finance people this is a sensible way to do business.
Beautiful, Andrew. Thank you. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. We do feel it, even if we don't choose to acknowledge it. We definitely feel it. Great. Well, that's beautifully rounded up, I think, our whole conversation. I'd love to know, and I think you've got an event coming up, right? You've got something happening in January. And do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we one of the things we're running next year is a business leader self-exploration journey, which is a 6-month program for business leaders to help them really figure out how they can be the best of themselves and contribute most in the world. And that includes a 9-day pilgrimage in Italy, out in nature. It's going to have to be in Tuscany in June for 9 days outside. But we'll manage with it. And we do have a series of online sessions where people can just discuss leadership, not just about this walk. And the next one is on the 19th of January. And really what we're about is connecting people, like-minded people. So we're interested in CEOs, business leaders who would like to do things differently, whom what we've said resonates with, because there are more and more business leaders who are like that. And I think a lot of them feel a bit lonely because it's contrary to the traditional form of leadership that people use. And we call it open-hearted, engaged leadership.
Beautiful. And how do people get hold of you? How do they find you?
Well, our website is heartandbusiness.org, but you can Google us. It's
heartandbusiness.org.
Yes.
Brilliant. On that note, you guys, we're going to have to end it there. Eudora and Andrew, thank you so much for coming to join me. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing your heartfelt intentions for business. And I wish you the very best. And listeners, if you're feeling inspired, get in contact with them both. I know them both. I can absolutely vouch for their just their credibility and beautifulness. So thank you for coming to join us. We'll have you back again one day in the foreseeable future.
For inviting us.
Yes. Thank you. It's been lots of fun.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure. Pleasure. So on that note, we come to the end of our show. As you know, we always end the show with our habit, with our ritual. We play the song Save the World by yours truly. It's me singing. The song was made in honor and appreciation of Greta Thunberg. Actually, in partnership with her. If you watch the video, you'll see her at the end telling people to play the song. We've dedicated 100% of the profits of this song, the royalties that would normally go to me as the performing artist, to Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Future MAPA movement. MAPA means the most affected people and areas. So if you've got Spotify, Amazon, Apple Tunes, YouTube, etc., please stick the song on your playlist. Play it as often as you can. You don't even need to like it. Just play it. And every time it gets played, people will be donated money. Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing you all next week. This is Save the World by Jarvis Smith featuring Rita Mora.